This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
If the Cubs are about winning this year, why would they trade Chris Bryant, even if his failed grievance means he's under contract for 2 years and at the height of his value? What is the best argument to trade him and the best to keep him?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a better team with him, but I think in the long term, they'd probably be better without him because they're going to be without him anyway. That is the only argument to trade him. The idea that they've gone to him and they can't get a deal done and they can't lock him up, and so they are going to eventually lose him, and when you have 2 years of control left on a player, he's of more value than when you have no control left over him because you can't trade nothing. So you're trying to get something for a guy that you believe is leaving anyway because he's not going to accept what your idea of what the long term contract should be. So The argument is very simple. It is you trade him before you lose him anyway, and having the 2 years, you get more for him than you will in another year. And the fear is that if you keep him here, he is disgruntled. He knows he's leaving. He's not happy about losing the arbitration. And I know we've heard things otherwise, but the idea would be that trying to hang on to him could be I don't want to say a cancer in the clubhouse, but it might not move you forward. But you're obviously a better team with him, and I would hate to see the guy go because it's not often a guy like that comes to town. But I do understand the idea that that you're paying him a lot of money, even though he's arbitration eligible. And he's probably not happy with it.
Well, I think everybody understands why they would want to get rid of him or trade him, because you can't let him risk, you can't risk letting him walk for nothing when he's a free agent. And you also have a luxury tax that you're trying to get under and have a mandate to get under, and you'd like to flip him for prospects that are much cheaper. Okay, but need to get this off my chest. This is a problem the Cubs created the minute that they put Chris Bryant down in Iowa. The White Sox didn't run into this problem with Eloy Jimenez or Luis Robert. They avoided it by working out a long-term deal. Maybe that was never possible with Scott Boras, but you've had time to try to get a deal done, and they haven't been able to get it done. So they have put themselves in this situation where, as a big market team, they're going to let a guy who is a former MVP, 28 years old, likely leave town because of contractual issues, because you're not be able to lock him up long term. What are we talking about here? It's good to get rid of a guy in Chicago for the Cubs that is a former MVP, could help you win. You're conceding everything about the 2020 season if you get rid of Chris Bryant now, even though I understand the reasons. You know, when you take a step back, this isn't Kansas City. This isn't Tampa. We're not talking about the Miami Marlins. You're talking about the Chicago Cubs, the second highest payroll in baseball last year. The fact that they can't find a way to retain a talent as gifted as Chris Bryant is, and what he means to an organization in so many ways. Now, you can look at his regression the last 2 years. You can look at his injury history, and you can find flaws in his overall game. But you've got a 28-year-old star who can be even better, and you're letting him go because of mistakes that you made along the way. If they do trade him, it will be a sad day in Cub history.
Yeah, I think you're pretty spot on. I mean, it's an organizational failure on every level that it's gotten to this point, that we had to go through this grievance process, that they don't want to re-up with Chris Bryant, and I'm sure he's asking for a lot of money. Obviously, he's a very accomplished player. He's still in his prime, and he will get a lot of money somewhere at some point, and I don't know why it can't be here in Chicago. If they're going to, well, just the first question here, if the Cubs are about winning this year, why would they trade Chris Bryant? I said it yesterday. They're not about winning this year. This is not a 2020 gung-ho, we're going for the division title winning roster. And the moves that they have put in place and the things they've done and the player acquisitions that they have accomplished this offseason does not say that they are serious about winning in 2020. And when they do trade Chris Bryant, which I think will happen sooner rather than later, it will just be another indictment on everyone from ownership, Theo Epstein to Jed Hoyer to everybody involved in this thing, to have such a high payroll and so many assets and resources and so many good players on this roster, and for the run or the window, whatever you want to call it, to abruptly stop like it is this year. It's I never saw it coming. It's horrible for the Cubs. They'll get a decent haul back for Chris Bryant, but don't tell me that they're trying to win this year, because they're clearly not.
Well, in terms of the Cubs, the 2020 Cubs being a win now team, I agree, Kevin, that the moves they made don't look like win now moves at all whatsoever. There's still a lot of talent on this roster, but I mean, I think what we're seeing are not win now moves, but what we will hear from the Cubs front office is that this is a win now team regardless. So trading Chris Bryant doesn't make any sense to me. But if I'm going to make an argument for why you would trade Chris Bryant, one of the big reasons would be, well, there's been a failure to develop pitching with this organization for years, and this would be maybe the first move to get some young pitching into your system that can be, you know, part of your future, like truly part of your starting rotation in the future, because pitching is a big part of this and a big part of the issue for the Cubs. I mean, you look at this starting rotation that they currently have, it's old. And as I said earlier in the week, I mean, Tyler Chatwood is your number five starter. That is a problem. And this has been a problem for the Cubs within this championship window. But the best argument to keep him is he's Chris frickin' Bryant. And you don't, I believe that if you feel like you are truly still in your championship window and you have enough talent to make it to another World Series, you don't get rid of your best player.
5 at 5 is brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait, download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app, and check in. This is really complicated, and this is a tough 5 at 5 question because of time constraints. I'm going to respectfully disagree with David at the start that this is all on the Cubs. This is on the owners and on the Players Association. This was collectively bargained. They agreed to it. Okay, they just followed it to the letter of the law. I have no problem also with Chris Bryant trying to file a grievance against it. He appealed it. He lost. That's it. Okay, now the question is, and I think Tom Thayer brought this up to us many years ago. Well, it's not that long ago, but the great Alshon Jeffrey, right? Was it a mistake for the Bears not to pay him? And the question Tom Thayer brought up is, he needed to look in Alshon's eyes and know if Alshon wanted to be here. And I think that's what we don't know right now. I don't believe that Chris Bryant wants to be here anymore. I think he's bored. I think he's accomplished.
Why is that, Dustin, though? Why is that?
That's just my personal
Because of the way that he has been treated. If that is true, it's because of the way he's been treated.
He's been making $15, $18 million a year. That's being mistreated. Mistreat me all you want. I will be your you-know-what
for
that.
We need to get into this
later. Okay, I mean, he's not been mistreated. Yeah. He's not been mistreated at all. That's not being mistreated. He's a Major League Baseball player. He has the right to appeal it, but he also has to get in line. And if the Cubs want to win now, you got to trade him, but you have to trade him to one team. and one team only. And I brought this up a while ago and was laughed at. Now certain people from the four-letter network are talking about it. So now it's got actual legs, okay? You trade his rear end to the Colorado Rockies for Arenado, and you go and you wake up the rest of the National League Central and you put them on notice that the Cubs are not going away while their window is still open.
What makes you think that they want to pay Nolan Arenado when they can't pay anybody? And because they've been signing guys on $800,000 deals.
Because it's 538, and we don't have enough time to explain it all to you, because you'd have to take off your shoes and socks for the math, Kevin.
Oh, nobody wants that.
You know, it's tough to be up here answering questions.
Now that Chris Bryant has lost his grievance, will he be in the Cubs' opening day lineup? And do you buy the Sun-Times report that there are no hard feelings?
I'm still getting past the Alshon Jeffrey reference. We need more time for that.
Let's bring it back. Come
okay,
on.
We'll bring it back.
Chris Bryant is Alshon Jeffrey? That, we have to bring that
you
back.
You can't look into his eyes and see that he's...
So is he Chris Bryant's?
Hey, they both got rings. That's one thing they got in common.
Chris Bryant's feelings, to respond to this question, are there no hard feelings? I think there's always going to be a kind of awkward relationship now moving forward if he were to stay, because of the fact they have spent the last 2 years immersed in speculation, or last season at least, that didn't need to exist. You mentioned the Players Association. You mentioned the CBA. Was it a problem for the White Sox? Wasn't a problem for teams that are able to strike deals with players to lock them up so they avoid this service time nonsense. And the service time thing is nonsensical. And I understand that's to the letter of the law. But to address the question directly, will he be in the Cubs opening day lineup? Regretfully, I think no. And I don't think it's going to be, according to the ESPN report, a one-for-one deal with Nolan Arenado and Chris Bryant. That doesn't make any contractual sense, or it doesn't help you get under the luxury tax, which is why this is also a driving force in this discussion. And as far as buying the Sun-Times report, and we'll talk to Gordon about not being any hard feelings, I believe Chris Bryant probably just wants to play. I don't know that he would hold it against the Cubs. I think he's probably looking forward to playing for David Ross and playing with Anthony Rizzo and playing in a familiar environment and setting for fans that really still do adore him. But I think that people around Chris Bryant, and I certainly think that his agency that represents Chris Bryant, you could say that those are fractured, those are hurt feelings, and it's a fractured relationship. So that makes things awkward moving forward. So I don't know that it's entirely accurate to say there are no hard feelings surrounding this.
Yeah, I can't imagine there aren't hard feelings surrounding it. I mean, I don't know that the hard feelings are about the grievance and him failing to win the grievance, but I think there are hard feelings. I think that whether it's the technical aspect of the grievance, I think they probably anticipated losing that. So I don't think there are really hard feelings. But I think the idea that you're being shopped all over the place, the idea that you're, you know, been offered a contract that you don't think is enough to keep you, and that they then don't want you, how does that not create bad feelings? That is nothing but bad feelings. You know, we sit here and we say things like, you know, everybody's seen The Godfather. You know, this is business. It's not personal. It's personal when it involves you. Of course it's. Business can be very personal. So I do not expect Chris Bryant in the opening day lineup, because I'm reading stories about five different trade ideas. I'm hearing rumors about different teams the Cubs have talked to and who's interested and who isn't. So I think he will be traded, and I think it will be a sad day, and I think there'll be hard feelings.
Maybe some hard feelings. I mean, I don't think he's going to be on the opening day roster. I don't think there's any question about that. Like I said earlier, it's not if he's traded, it's when he's traded. And I think the sooner the deal gets done, if the Cubs do have anything else up their sleeves and any other roster moves that they are inclined to take care of here in the offseason, as somebody texted in, called me a Cub-hating noun. I don't want to say
careful,
on the air.
Careful, Kevbo. Yeah,
a blank. I don't know if we're still in the safe harbor.
Dustin is texting.
Same area code, I believe. They love me out there. But he's not going to be in the opening day lineup. I think he'll be in the Braves opening day lineup, maybe, or the Nationals opening day lineup. It's not going to be in Chicago. And I don't think that there are hard feelings. I don't think there's going to be animosity between Theo and David Ross and Chris Bryant or Tom or Jed or anybody involved. I think that these guys are sure, they're professional, they're adults, they understand it is a business. It can be bordering on personal sometime, but I think these guys are all on the level with each other. It's just they have to make a move. They're at a tight spot here. They clearly have not been able to come to terms on a deal for whatever reason that is. I don't know what the offer is. Maybe that'll come out later, whether it's a high offer, maybe it's a low ball offer. I have no idea, but I just don't think he's going to be here. And I think it's almost a formality at this point.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with the fact that or the idea that Chris Bryant won't be on the opening day roster, and that's just because the Cubs have made absolutely no moves, and so therefore we have been led to believe that this grievance has held everything up. And I don't know how you expect to win with the moves that they've made and virtually the same 2019 Cubs roster, virtually, I mean, with some subtractions of talent. Yeah, I don't think he'll be there, unfortunately, and it makes me very, very sad as a Cubs fan to say that. In terms of Gordon Wittenmeyer's reporting, I believe Chris Bryant is being diplomatic and telling people there are no hard feelings. Sure, but I think there are definitely hard feelings.
That's what I think of the report from the Sun-Times. I really do like Gordon a lot, and I trust him, but I don't even... The person that he talked to, his source, I'm calling... Excuse me. Fine. I'm going to repeat what I said the first time. I don't think he's going to be on the opening day roster, but I want there to be a piece that is ready to play every day on the opening day roster in order for me to accept this, if that makes sense. I'm not interested in the Cubs 3 or 4 years from now finally getting back to the postseason because of the pieces that they acquired. I mean, who will be left? Who will be left from that World Series team 3 or 4 years from now? Right? I mean, so we got enough rebuilding going on in Chicago. We don't need that over at Clark and Addison.
I mean, that's a pretty general question.
Mitchell Trubisky had surgery to repair a torn labrum in his left non-throwing shoulder. Is that reason enough to get an upgrade at the quarterback position? Do you want them to sign a free agent, trade for a player, or just draft a quarterback?
That's an interesting idea. Yeah, we had a texter say it's a pity that Mitch won't be out longer and miss camp, so then you can go get a real quarterback. So that's just mean-spirited. But, I don't think the torn labrum and the throwing shoulder is the reason to go get to upgrade the quarterback position or to make the room better. I think the fact that you want to win next year is the reason that you do it. And I think there's plenty of guys out there. There's a lot of movement in free agency. There should be a quarterback or two available, so why not try to go out and make that move? But I don't believe it has to happen because of Mitch's shoulder surgery, and I don't believe he's going to throw left-handed.
He's not, but I do think that there's something to the fact that might have bothered him down the stretch. It might have bothered him after he injured it. I don't think it excuses the way that he played because he was inaccurate before the injury, and he was inaccurate after the injury. So I don't know that we're seeing something that isn't there. And I think that this is a convenient kind of crutch to lean on. It doesn't change for me anything about the Bears' offseason mandate to go to upgrade the position and to get somebody who is, if you want to put it in air quotes, challenge Mitch Trubisky for the starting job, even though they want to make sure that he's the starter in 2020 on week one. I still think you can go out there and look at some enticing possibilities. You know, all this conversation about Philip Rivers, I don't think he's coming to Chicago, but it sort of has overshadowed what's going on in New Orleans with Drew Brees possibly coming back and them talking about what that means for Taysom Hill. There's almost a foregone conclusion that Teddy Bridgewater is going out and going to not re-sign with the Saints, and he's going to be a free agent. And that's where you start, really. If you're the Bears, you wonder what you have to at least explore and do your due diligence about Teddy Bridgewater and every quarterback that comes after that, Andy Dalton, and the list goes on. So I don't know that, Mitch's shoulder surgery about the torn labrum wasn't terribly surprising. We talked about that after the season was over, but to me it changes very little about what the Bears need to do in this offseason moving forward.
Well, you know, good for Mitch to get his surgery and get taken care of and get his body right. Nobody wants to be hurt or certainly play football injured, but I have a bad feeling that there's a certain contingent of Mitchell Trubisky truthers that are still out there that still think that this guy is a viable starting NFL quarterback that are going to use this as an excuse or as a crutch and say, oh, well, Mitch wasn't 100% last year. That's why he struggled. And I think the biggest Mitchell Trubisky truther and somebody who's out there that has no idea what a good quarterback looks like is Ryan Pace, unfortunately, which is why I don't believe that any real authentic competition will be brought in. I think they might draft a guy late. They might sign some off the street guy that's, you know, they're going to say it's a competition, it's an open competition, but it's not really going to be. And they're just going to take us all for fools and keep telling us that this is the guy. He's not the guy. They need to get a guy in here that's better than Mitch, which shouldn't be too hard to find, but there is only like, what, five or six actual good quarterbacks playing anyway. So maybe it's more difficult than it seems. I just hope people don't use this as an excuse or a crutch to think that Mitchell Trubisky somehow will wake up one morning and be a legitimate NFL starting quarterback, because he's not, and he's not going to be.
I'm sure there are those that'll make the argument that, you know, maybe Mitch Trubisky was restricted with that injury and he was limited in terms of what he could do on the field or whatever. But it's not about the injury for me. The injury is not the reason to upgrade the QB position or bring competition in. It's Mitch Trubisky just being Mitch Trubisky. We've seen enough. We have seen enough. It's time to bring someone in. Let the Blake Bortles era Jaguars be a cautionary tale. Let the 2019 Titans be an inspiration for what can happen when you bring someone in that is truly competition. You see what happened in Tennessee and how they were able to turn their entire season around with a change at QB.
And maybe Ray, if you like that plan, you get that guy from Tennessee and you
maybe
get the guy that
There's
was replaced.
This class
by the
of
guy,
free
right?
agents, a lot of good quarterbacks out there.
I do want there to be competition, but I will say that I think that non-throwing shoulder could have been an issue. I mean, one of the things Mitch does well is use his feet. And I think he was worried about getting a hit. I think the team was worried about him getting hit. So I think sometimes the team told him, listen, Mitch, you can't run. You cannot put yourself in that position. It's just not acceptable. Throw the ball away. I think that's what they were doing. So I'm willing to wait and see. They don't have enough draft capital to draft a future starter, I don't think, in this league, or at least one that's going to do anything for you. So I don't think it's the draft, but I do. There needs to be an upgrade over Chase. There's no doubt about
it. But hold
that.
On a second. If you take a quarterback with your first pick in the second round, where they draft, you don't think there's going to be pressure and expectations around that guy?
The expectations would be there, of course, David. But in my opinion, I don't think anybody would be available worth a darn. I'm not a big – this group doesn't do a whole heck of a lot for me after you get past, like, the third guy. It's just not – I don't think it's just the greatest quarterback class of all time. And I'm not even sure about – I know this is blasphemy. I'm not even sure about the great Joe Burrow.
Oh, that is blasphemy.
That's a good question.
I need to look in his eyes, David.
I can watch his arm. I got a pretty good idea.
Yeah, the arm is pretty important, too. As big of a star as Patrick Mahomes is, how would it affect his celebrity if he played in a bigger market? And is that good or bad for the league?
You can look in Patrick Mahomes' eyes and know that he's a star. I can tell you that. No, but I this was an interesting discussion that kind of came out of the Super Bowl week about, you know, Patrick Mahomes and the game's biggest star is going to be the game's highest paid player when he signs this extension, which is coming to him and he deserves. I don't know that it would be any better for the league if he were in a bigger market. I almost wonder what it would do to Patrick Mahomes, the personality. He's a very, very open guy. He's a very relaxed personality. And I wonder if New York or Chicago or, you know, Boston or Philly, somewhere like that, would beat him down a little bit and maybe make him a little bit more guarded than he appears to be. We heard yesterday from a guy in Kansas City saying his press conferences are somewhat rehearsed in 17-second responses, but he sure comes across as a likable personality, somebody you'd like to kind of represent your franchise, and certainly represents the league very well. Peyton Manning, it worked for him. He was a big star in Indianapolis. Cam Newton became a superstar in Carolina. There are examples of guys who in smaller markets can still, you know, kind of overcome those limitations. And then you look at Eli Manning. Eli Manning was maybe an understated superstar in New York under that scrutiny, and he had the perfect temperament for that market. So I think it just depends. But I don't think it's bad for the league that Patrick Mahomes is the game's biggest star and he happens to be in Kansas City. Actually, I think it's probably better for him because we get to see more of who he really is.
Yeah, some of the league's biggest stars were in Green Bay. I mean, name a smaller place,
good
right?
Example.
You saw one of the best teams we've seen didn't win in Buffalo, another really small market. I think that there are players that have the ability to be national, international-type stars based on their performance, nothing to do with where they're at. So I think that that having him in Kansas City is fine. I don't think it affects whether or not he's going to be a star of stars or if you put him in New York, would you really have anything better out of it? You'd have an argument between two teams about who was the greatest quarterback ever. So I think it's fine right where he's at.
Yeah, I think with the NFL, it's different. And Green Bay is the exact same thing I was going to bring up. I mean, nobody likes anything about the state of Wisconsin or the city of Green Bay or the hideous uniforms that the Packers wear or any of that stuff. And the superiority of these fans that think they're the greatest fans in the world. They think they actually own a part of the team. And, you know, you pat them on the head and tell them whatever they want to believe. But with the NFL, it's different because you can watch any player on any team any given Sunday or Thursday or Monday or whatever. There's so few games that you can seek out and be able to find if your favorite player plays in Kansas City or probably not Detroit, but or, you know, in Los Angeles, anywhere in the NFL, then you're going to be able to find that guy. And it's not like Mike Trout, whose games start at 9:30 on the West Coast or here, and he plays on the West Coast, so you never get to see him. You can see Patrick Mahomes anytime you like. Hell, he's on national TV pretty much every week in the game of the week because he's that good. So I think it's fine. It's different for the NFL because it's such a fewer amount of games.
I agree. This is the NFL is an exception. Patrick Mahomes is good for the league because he's Patrick Mahomes, and you could plant him in any city, any team across the league. But yeah, the fact that you know there's one game a week and you can catch it at the same times, the same basic two times, either or three times, afternoon or night. It's appointment viewing to see Patrick Mahomes play, and it doesn't matter what team he's on.
His celebrity, I think, could grow personally being on either one of the coasts. But I'll tell you what, a three-touchdown, 300-yard, three passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown, Chiefs 33, 49ers 17, Super Bowl win, Super Bowl MVP. It doesn't matter if you're in Jacksonville, Florida, okay? You're going to be very, very popular in the NFL, okay? And for all the reasons everybody's laid out. So I think it could help him personally, but I don't think it helps the league one way or the other, no matter where he's at, if he plays like he's capable of playing.
You can't beat that question. You can try, but you can't beat that question.
Did the Bulls get jobbed in their 115-106 overtime loss at Indiana, and did they fall apart after a bad call?
Yeah, they got jobbed, and they fell apart, after a bad timeout, too. So there were a couple of times they fell apart. They came roaring back in that game, and they took the lead, and then they were holding on for dear life, and they had the ball in the final seconds, and you had Zach LaVine driving to the basket, thankfully, and when he pulled up to shoot, it's clear as day that he was fouled. It was Victor Oladipo, who had a great game, but he came up behind him and slapped him on the arm, and the ball flew away, and I mean, I don't know how you missed that call. It was unbelievable. He would have been at the line with two free throws, and he would have hit one of them, you would think, and won the game. So, yes, they got jobbed, but they did not turn up for the overtime, which is another problem. I mean, they lost the tip, and then they were down six before the game even got going, and they were out of it, and it was over. So, a pity, a missed opportunity, a bad call. And a team that fell apart.
Oladipo hit the biggest shot of the night, the big three.
Yep.
That was the dagger for the...
It was like almost a half-court shot.
It was
shot.
From Noblesville. It was it was from that far away. But I think that what happened was in that arena, you saw all night the emotion from the fans and the emotion. This was his night. And I almost wonder, refs are human. Victor Oladipo was the one who committed the foul. It was like he got the benefit of the doubt on that rather than Zach LaVine, and that was a terrible call.
Terrible.
The refs were like,
terrible non-call.
I can't. Yeah, terrible non-call. A terrible kind of lapse in judgment, because then if he hits the free throws, Bulls escape, and they get a victory, and then we're talking about a lot of different things this morning, but they didn't, and I think they felt like they went into overtime, and they maxed out and they ran out of gas. And this was, they didn't have enough to overcome because they're playing shorthanded as it is. The Jim Boylan timeout with 3 minutes, 40 seconds left was just as pivotal as the non-call. So if you want to blame the refs, fine, but you also have to include the coach in there as well as sharing responsibility for this one.
And it may look like the Pacers came back in that game, but that they failed repeatedly, missed the chances down the stretch. They scored the last 7 points of the game, but it took them like 5 minutes to do it. It was ridiculous.
What's ridiculous is that the team is 1-19 now versus teams with a winning record. And over the course of 48 minutes, you're going to get good calls. You're going to get bad calls. Some will go against you. Some will go against the other team. But when your record is that poor against quality opponents, I can't really say that you were jobbed in any way. It just comes down to the fact that they're not a very good team. They're not a well-coached team. They don't have smart people in the front office. And the only people getting jobbed or Bulls fans that have to watch this garbage day in, day out. The people getting jobbed are us and the fans and the people that pay money to the United Center and go there to watch this team because they're Bulls fans and they will always be Bulls fans. But we are being jobbed every day that John Paxson and Gar Foreman and Jim Boylan continue to be employed.
The Bulls were jobbed. Zach LaVine was jobbed. That was a good rally the Bulls had in the fourth quarter against a good team. And unfortunately, he didn't get the call and they did fall apart in OT, and that's on them.
Well, this says a lot about the argument whether he will or will not be an all-star later on today, okay? And for the people that don't think he's an all-star, this is why all-stars get that call, okay? All-stars get that call in
when they're
league.
Obviously when fouled at the end of a game.
Right, you get that call, and that might be it. Now, I personally think he's going to get it, and the reason he's going to get it is because the game's in Chicago. If it was anywhere else, we wouldn't even be talking about it, right? But I don't think they got jobbed. There were plenty of other. How about this? Don't blow that lead with like 3 minutes and change to go. Well, David, you had the number 22-6. Okay. How about don't do that in the fourth quarter and close out a game? That would have been the tone this morning on the Bulls would be you don't need Markkanen, and the Bulls are headed in the right direction. And isn't it a great story that Oladipo played, but you know, that's nice. He played. Pat him on the head. Thanks for coming back. Glad you're not injured anymore. That would have, instead, Bulls can't close.
Yeah.
Oladipo buried you. Oladipo's a class act, and LaVine shouldn't be an all-star.
You're absolutely, that's absolutely right. That's, the whole story is
one
different.
One call shouldn't make that conversation that much different.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. That's the 5 at 5. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.